So, retrospectors, what historical events are we ticking off on this week's run of Today in History?
Well, Monday is the anniversary of the day Roger first published his famous thesaurus.
Then on Tuesday, we say happy birthday, Mr. Potato Head.
On Wednesday, the extraordinary stories of the child soldiers who fought in the American Civil War.
On Thursday, how King James changed the word of God.
And on Friday, what did spam emails look like in 1978?
We discuss this and more on Today in History with the retrospectors. 10 minutes every weekday, wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, Man fans. Ollie Man here with another exciting instalment of The Modern Man. Hope you're all having a lovely week. The obsessive pedants amongst you may have noticed that as this is episode 5, tradition dictates a discussion about parenthood on the pod. I've been in touch with Tom Price and Stuart Goldsmith. We've actually all just been too busy to find a day to meet at the moment. But the good news is hopefully we will be able to bring you a How to Be a Dad Part 3 before the end of this series. However, what I do have for you for this week was kind of topical because we're about to have the autumn statement by the Chancellor. It's when the Chancellor sort of spells out the financial outlook for the country, and it's always an occasion where you'll hear commentators pop up on the telly talking about productivity. Has it gone up? Has it gone down? How can we as a country be more productive? And I often think, I don't want the country to be more productive if it means we all have to work more and we're all going to be miserable. So this week, I'm speaking to a productivity expert, or productivity, if you're from North America, as he is. Hopefully, there'll be some tips in there to help you make your life a little more efficient. In the meantime, thanks everyone who's bought us a beer this week. Louise Wade, Oliver Sloan, Nick Chivers, Ross Freighter, Alistair Bell, Sam Varney, Mark Kluwer, Nathan, and Mikhail in Russia, who's emailed me to say, Ollie, sorry for this intrusion. I know it's impolite to talk money, but before buying you a beer, I'd like to know what your planned budget to run the show is. I think if you could make these costs transparent for everybody, it would be easier to donate. Well, Mikhail, thank you for asking. I'm setting our initial budget at £5 million. Really, all you need to know is, if everyone listening to this right now signed up to buy us just one beer a month, then we would instantly be able to make this show weekly all year round. That's my goal. That's what we want to do. And the more of you that do that, the more shows we can make. So go to modernman2n's.co.uk and click Beer Money. We really, really appreciate it. Right, in this episode, you're going to learn what nanogen is and how it can help you get on daytime TV, what women want — it's nothing to do with Mel Gibson — and why productivity porn is a waste of your precious, precious time. Let's go. On this week's Modern Man.
Everybody's wired differently, so people have different peak energy times of the day.
Staying ahead of the game with the productivity king.
I think it's really important that we emphasise that just because something's female-friendly does not mean it will suit every female's taste.
And the porn you should watch when your wife is watching too. But first, it's time for the zeitgeist with the man who puts the sex in Strawberry Blonde. It's Ollie Pitt.
What?
What are the trends we should all be thinking about this week, Ollie?
Makeup. Back in the day, analogue TV fuzzed out all the bad bits, right? We now live in a 4K world where your phone can take 4K images, your screen at home can display 4K pictures, videos, and it has given birth to the spornosexual.
The what?
The spornosexual.
You're going to, instead of just saying it in a vaguely threatening way, you're going to have to talk me through the origins of that word construction.
Well, the spur is for sport. The orn bit is for porn, and sexual is just because that's just like a...
Sporty porn sexual.
Basically, right, what men do is they want to be uber ripped. Like Brad Pitt in Fight Club. You remember that body?
I do.
I mean, I don't want to be like that.
No, I'm modelling myself on Giles Brandreth.
But essentially, it's basing your body on sports people and porn stars. It's having this sort of hyper-defined, HD-ready body. You've got to be 4K ready, Ollie. Like your TV. You've got to be ready. Because you think... I mean, I've been on TV, and I can spot my flaws a mile off.
Mm.
So for me, I kind of think, oh, maybe I need to be a spornosexual. I mean, I'm not going to do that because it requires way too much effort.
But, anyway, but all around us are examples of men who are constantly in 4K and HD who are completely ill-equipped for that. I mean, in two words, Adam Bolton.
Well, Jeremy Clarkson.
Mark Lawson.
I mean, those people have... they've got something about them. They're actually quite interesting.
Mm.
So for people that don't have anything, they want to look good for their selfies, for their Facebook profile, Ollie. It's more than just being on TV. You just need to look good, right?
Okay, so what you're saying is actually the technology that's sold to us telling us that we can take ever better pictures of ourselves might ultimately end up in people having ever greater complexes about their own body.
And I started off by saying makeup. What I think will happen, you see, is women have been using makeup for a very long time.
Okay, you're predicting a boom in men's makeup.
Boom in men's makeup.
Interesting.
I think that there's going to be so much pressure that the spornosexuals will take it to a level where they will start using makeup more and more regularly. You'll see it way more often.
Mm.
That's my prediction. Would you wear makeup? Like, no. Aside from like being on TV, would you like walking around the street? Would you bother?
No, but actually, it's interesting. I've been in the situation. I don't know if it's ever happened to you. I've been in the situation where, for whatever reason, for a photo shoot or an interview or whatever, someone's put makeup on me.
Mm.
I never refuse makeup. I'm never someone who's like, oh, I don't wear makeup. I'm a real man. That's ridiculous.
You've got great skin.
Yeah, thank you, Ollie. But I often find that when I've been done, I'm reluctant to wipe it off. Because
so after you've done your bit, you then go home.
I go home and I keep, because I quite like having orange tan for the day and having my bald spot covered up and stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
How do they cover a bald spot?
The product is called Nanogen.
Well, it sounds really toxic.
And if they don't have that, because
that's
like a special powder they brush into my bald spot. If they don't have that, then they can use dry shampoo for black women, which also is the same thing on brown hair, fills in the gaps.
Okay, so spornosexuals are going to be using all of that.
Yeah. Take
that's
your beauty tips
happen.
From Ollie Mann.
Seriously, that's what they're going to do. They're going to be using it on their ball patches, then they're going to be make-upping their faces and all that stuff.
What other trends do you have for us this week, Ollie?
Nastiness.
This isn't new.
Do you watch I'm a Celebrity?
Okay, I thought you were going to go President Trump, but okay, let's talk about reality TV.
No, I don't
watch I'm a Celebrity, but for reason that I've seen it before, and it's the same every year, so I've done it now.
No, it's not the same.
It is literally the same every year.
Oh, no, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan.
Really?
Yeah, love it.
It's literally the same every year.
No,
they get dumped in a helicopter, one of them falls off, one of them has to clean the toilet, there's an old woman, there's a woman in the shower. It's the same every year.
No, it's not the same every year. This year, in particular, right? Because what they did this time, they all got on. And not only did they all get...
I was right not to watch it. Who wants to watch a lot of people getting on?
I do!
Why?
Because we've had a whole year of shit, Ollie. It's been a dreadful year. 2016 has been a terrible, terrible year. And I was sat down. Look, I would agree with you usually. I'd say, nah, I want to see people punching each other and getting into a little fight or whatever. But watching it, I thought, I was surprised by my reaction. Because I was like, this is great. They're all getting on. I feel warm inside.
Oh, so you had the bake-off effect, basically.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
Here's something completely inoffensive to take away my mind from the fact the world's falling apart.
Completely.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what made me realise it even more. The other day, they brought in two people.
Right.
Danny Baker.
And Satan.
And this guy called Martin from Homes Under the Hammer. And when they went in, both of them, they caused a problem.
What do you
they
mean?
Were negative. They were negative thinkers.
Oh, God,
they
you sound like Noel
divisive.
Edmonds.
No, listen. No. I'm not trying to sell like...
The world isn't divided into positive and negative people. I don't believe that.
No, but they
They probably
of,
they
were
briefed, weren't they, to go in and make some drama because otherwise there's nothing to watch.
Yeah, but what it highlighted for me is that I don't want to see that.
You
I
just wanted to watch the friendly,
I
happy,
just
clappy
see,
things.
But yeah, I want to see...
As a child, were you someone who preferred Disney cartoons or Warner Brothers?
Warner Brothers.
Okay.
Because you got all the hitting and...
You've got a rebellious spirit about you. Now,
yeah.
I preferred the Disney.
Yeah.
I preferred everybody, let's just get along... Here's a nice story about some people going to a park with a dog. Nothing happens. They all go home and they like each other.
Mm.
I now, as an adult, crave the violence and the slapstick comedy. I think it all depends how you've been brought up and then wanting to subvert it.
Well, I don't think it's... I think it is specifically for this year, right? I just think that there needs to be all this nasty, horrible stuff that you see on reality TV in particular, because it's a really vicious medium and I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
Needs to just change. I don't like the bullying on X Factor. I hate it.
No, I think...
All that stuff.
I agree that moment has passed. Like, the moment where Gordon Ramsay was like, oh, you think you're a cook, do you? Well, actually, you're a little twat. That moment's gone. But I think there's still need for tension. Otherwise, there's no drama.
Yeah,
there's a sort of basic ingredient of Aristotelian drama.
Yeah, but there's a difference between tension and being a horrible
Agreed.
Prick.
What's your third and hopefully final trend of the week?
The death of tapas.
Is that a new Almodovar movie? What's the death of tapas?
I'll set the scene for you, Ollie.
Yeah.
Right? You walk into a restaurant.
I'm
the
there.
The decor is classy, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
They've gone to the trouble of buying individual chairs from eBay, so the place has got that sort of rustic feel.
I know the type.
Really nice.
Yeah.
You feel homely.
There's
you're
neon
impressed.
Lights, but it's not cheap.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, I like this place.
Uh-huh.
I like it a lot. You grab the menu. You open the menu. And you think, ooh, these prices are good.
Yes. Yes.
And then the waiter comes along.
Yeah.
And he says to you, have you been here before?
Yeah.
You say no. He goes, well, we're a little bit different from your usual restaurant.
Yes.
And you're thinking, oh, for fuck's
sake. Shit, yeah.
We're like an Italian tapas. Fuck off!
Yes, yes. What that means is I'm going to have to pay three times as much as I would at Pizza
Express.
Exactly.
You're
going to
get
a
miniature bolognese. You're going to get a little aperitif of garlic bread.
Yeah.
And you've got to share it with everybody, even though you don't want to. All I want is a big bowl of bolognese or whatever. Like, choose theme of restaurant.
Okay, so you
put tapas after.
Yeah. Okay. And I see what you're saying. You're saying rather like nastiness in reality television.
Mm.
Perhaps the era has ended for tapas restaurants that aren't serving tapas. However, I would say if it is a Spanish restaurant, then tapas is appropriate.
Yeah. No, I just think that I want starter, main, dessert.
I'm
to a Carvery the other day,
uh-huh,
and Carveries have sort of, they've upped their game, Ollie.
Have they?
Yeah. The last time I went to a Carvery, the place smelt like cabbage, and the chairs were like covered in this sort of weird, horrible plastic that, you know, if you shat yourself, it would kind of just drop off on the floor and someone would come mop it up.
Goodness, that's vivid.
My point is they've upped their game and it's really, really good, really classy, and you have all the lovely delights of Yorkshire puddings and all those kinds of things, and that's what people want now. I don't want little bits of everything. I want just one hearty, amazing dish.
You want back to basics, don't you, this week, Ollie? You want a world where people aren't obsessed with their looks, where they can eat a hearty meal and where no one's nasty to them.
Yeah, I'm just sick of 2016.
Yeah, well, good fucking luck with that. If people have a suggestion for next week's show, what should they do with it?
They can tweet us on Twitter, at The Modern Man,
mm-hmm,
or alternatively, they can just leave us alone.
Now, how productive are you? You're probably listening to this whilst you're doing something else. You are commuting, or you're in the bath, or you're doing the ironing. You're a multitasker. You get shit done, right? That way you can cram your day with stuff. But be honest, do you worry about how much time you waste? Could you be doing more of what you love doing and still do your work more efficiently, more smartly, more productively? Well, one man who knows is Chris Bailey. He could well be the most productive man in the world, because in a series of experiments upon himself, he spent a year trying out the various different techniques that you hear peddled around aimed at increasing his personal productivity. But he then measured the actual outcomes to devise what he says is a perfect system for managing his life. Now, apologies in advance for the poor sound quality on my mic during this interview. I had very unproductively left my good microphone at home, but I had to make the most of my meeting with Chris because he'd flown over to Britain from Canada for just a short time, and I think I got a really enlightening conversation out of him. Here it is.
I don't know what it is, but I've always had this sense that we only have so much time. We spend hours binge-watching Netflix, and you know, there's a bit of return in that in terms of the how engaged we are with it and the meaning it has. But there are other things that, you know, are much more valuable and meaningful. So why not spend this limited amount of time in a valuable and meaningful way?
Most people, when they think about being productive, it's so they can spend more time on the beach.
Yeah.
Is that valuable?
Well, I think there's insane amount of value in that. You know, as far as our productivity is concerned, this relaxation is so crucial. We have a limited pool of physiological energy in our brain. And when we deplete that, our productivity is toast. That's why when you don't take breaks, your brain takes them for you. But I would also argue that if you intend to have a perfectly relaxing day on a beach somewhere and put your feet up and totally unwind and read a good book, and then you do, I would argue that you're perfectly productive in those cases too, because you achieved your intention. And an experience like being on the beach, I love, there's nobody who likes being on the beach more than me. I find meaning in that. I find meaning in that relaxation and soaking in information. You know, that's what's meaningful to me. If I set out to do that, if I form that intention to do that, and then I do, I would say, you know, you're perfectly productive.
Okay, talk me through your year of experimentation then. What was the first thing you tried, and was it the thing that you thought would work, or did you just want to tick everything off the list?
It's funny because my definition of productivity changed so much over the course of the year. The ones I started at the start of the project they were writing 100,000 words over the course of the year. I ended up writing 200,000, gaining 10 pounds of muscle mass. They were kind of the longer term ones that I, at the start of the project, I ended up gaining 15.
Where did that even come from in your brain that you thought gaining muscle mass would help you be more productive at your work?
Yeah, what I started with is the idea of what I wanted to measure and work backwards to kind of a weird experiment to measure that. And so fitness is something that, you know, we feel more energy after we go for a workout. And so I thought, why not put that to the test and maybe take it to the extreme and push on my limits a bit?
So did you have to explain to a personal trainer who was really built that your reason that you wanted to be there was to be more productive at
work? Yeah, and that was the lens that I saw everything through over the course of the year is what detracts from my productivity and what adds to my productivity. And some of them were a bit counterintuitive. Like the one that comes to mind as being the most counterintuitive was meditating for 35 hours over the course of a week. I've had this daily meditation ritual for, you know, 30 minutes for I think 5, 6, 7 years by now. And you look at the two ideas, right? Productivity is about doing more and faster. Meditation is about just kind of sitting there and watching your breath and trying to refocus on it over and over again. It seems so unproductive. And so I stopped. But after I stopped, I noticed that several things began to happen. I became more stressed out. I became more distracted. Things seemed to affect me more. I couldn't refocus as well. I had less energy because I didn't have the awareness to step back from my work. And that's when I ran this experiment to meditate for 35 hours over the course of a week to see the impact. The thing that I wanted to measure was meditation, to see what impact that had on my productivity. And I noticed that while I didn't have as much time that week, naturally, because I was meditating for 35 hours, I overcompensated for that fact by bringing more attention to my work and more energy to my work. And when I looked at how much I actually accomplished during that week, you know, how much I was able to research, the interviews I was able to conduct, the amount of words I was able to write, I was more productive that week than in most other weeks of the project because I was able to bring this deliberateness to my work and focus so much more clearly on it. And I think it goes to this idea that productivity can be so much more about just managing our time. It can be about managing our attention and our energy too.
Yeah, there seems to be a central paradox about productivity is you talk to mums and dads about this as well. At the moment they become parents, and I'm obviously very much in this mindset at the moment.
Yeah.
I have less time, I'm tired, and yet actually when I sit down at my computer and do work for that reason, I really do focus on the work in a way that I never used to. I used to take massive long detours into Wikipedia, and yeah, that doesn't happen now.
And I think the shift there is the value of your time goes up. Because for every minute you're working, you could be spending that minute with your kids. And so when that opportunity cost is so high, the value of your time becomes higher and you have no choice but to be productive.
Okay, so what really didn't work in your year of experimentation? What was a complete waste of time?
Another one of the experiments I started was waking up at 5:30 every morning for 3 months. And I struggled.
The Margaret Thatcher technique.
Yeah, God, yeah. You know, I woke up at 5:30, I meditated, I read the newspaper, I had a coffee before the rest of the world even woke up. But eventually, you know, I realized that I absolutely hated this ritual. I had to go to bed in order to get enough sleep, so I had more energy the next day when a lot of my friends wanted to hang out. And I had to compromise my social life and my happiness for the sake of this pure efficiency. And, you know, eventually I ran into research that shows that there's no connection between our socioeconomic standing and what time we wake up at. It's what we do with the hours of our day after we wake up that make the difference in how much we accomplish over the course of the day. And everybody's wired differently, so people have different peak energy times of the day. And I found that when I looked to how much I accomplished over the course of the day, I was less productive in that experiment than, you know, most other times of the productivity project.
And another thing that's happening clearly is we're all relying on technology more, and we all sort of expect the people that we're emailing, the people that we're calling, the people that we're instant messaging to be there and answering immediately. Now, one thing that I noticed immediately when I contacted you out of the blue is I got an out-of-office reply, which basically said something like, thanks for your email. I only check my emails, whatever it was, at 9 o'clock in the morning. I'll get back to you soon.
Our time might be the most limited, but our attention is what's in the most demand. I think technology exists for our convenience and not the convenience of every person on the planet who wants to contact us. And maybe being available only once a day over email is a bit douchey and not everybody has the flexibility to do that. But to me, my attention is really, really valuable. It's one of the primary ingredients I use in order to get work done. It's what allowed me to write a book, and it's what lets me do talks and things of that nature. And so there's much higher leverage things in our work than checking email or doing social media. Our real work is never in email. It's not in being a traffic cop. It's in engineering a new product that helps people out. It's in connecting with new customers to expand our business. It's to do these tasks that are so integral to the work that we do. It's usually not an email.
Isn't there a danger that by trying to seek a more productive life, that in itself is a form of procrastination? That actually a lot of people that buy too many books on this and listen to too many podcasts about this, they're spending too much of their time listening to how to be more productive and therefore are less productive.
And that's the thing, right? For all the time you spend reading about productivity, you have to make that time back and then some, or else you're just looking at productivity porn. And that's the thing that I found over the course of this year-long deep dive, is there is more productivity porn out there than there is real advice that leads you to accomplish more every day.
What, give me an example of productivity porn.
Waking up early. Yeah. Is a big one, or you know, reorganizing or color coding or prioritizing, you know, by different levels or different colors in a Moleskine notebook or whatever the hell, you know, it is that's on Lifehacker these days. You don't earn that time back that you spend doing these productivity tactics. You know, the rule of three is a good side-by-side comparison to, you know, a rule such as, you know, color coding all the tasks in your day. The rule of three is it's a real process that only takes a few minutes, where you separate everything that's important in your work from everything that isn't, and on a daily basis, so when you'll actually action it. Whereas color code, I don't know why that example came to mind, but it's that type of advice that really, it frustrates me, because it's fun to read about, but you don't earn that time back. And so I think the value of a productivity nugget or piece of advice is directly related to how much time it lets you earn back. And because that's really related to productivity. Productivity is how much you accomplish. So the best tactics out there should lead you to accomplish more.
And I couldn't help noticing as well, just before this interview, we went to a coffee shop and you bought yourself a coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are concerned that too much caffeine is a problem for productivity as well, that they feel like they're achieving more because they're going quickly, but it's a drug.
The thing about caffeine is you invariably have a caffeine crash later on in the day. And you can't avoid that. There are some ways to lessen it by doing things like drinking green tea or matcha, but you have to pay that amount of energy back later on in the day through that caffeine crash.
So you've made a calculation with that coffee, right?
I have. You know, later on in the day, I don't need as much energy as I need right now.
Yeah.
And it's a simple choice, but it's a intentional choice where energy will give me more value with us chatting now and with me visiting there's an art gallery called the Tate here in London. Right after this, I'll be able to soak in things more there. I'll get more meaning out of this energy than I would later on in the day when I have to do a couple of routine meetings in my work.
This is the same justification I use for having a beer with lunch. I'm sure I shouldn't.
No, but you probably shouldn't.
I think, yeah, this kind of vaguely post-coital glow sitting here with my fish and chips. It's much better that I feel spaced out and unable to work at this point because it's making me happy.
Yeah, if it makes you happy. Yeah. Do what makes you happy, man.
Yeah. Well, I still have to draw the line at one.
you probably should. Unfortunately, I didn't find much of a correlation between alcohol and caffeine during the project. Drinking caffeine is this magical way of summoning more energy from later on in the day and putting it right now. You know, alcohol is kind of this way of borrowing energy and happiness from the next day.
Yeah. And in your mission to become the world's most productive man, what have you got left to accomplish? What actually bothers you, makes you think, you know what, I need to work on that?
Frankly, I think I need to work on enjoying the process along the way, as opposed to just thinking about what's next. You know, you need to think about what's next, but when you're doing your work, I think it's so crucial to enjoy it. And so that's what I'm working on right now. You know, my mind has this tendency to race ahead of itself and go on to the next thing. But I think just enjoying things as they happen is something I need to do better.
Chris Bailey there. You can find out more about Chris on his website, alifeofproductivity.com, and in his book, The Productivity Project, which is out now. But if you want to be even more productive and find those links quickly, they're all on our website. This episode of The Modern Man is supported by Beer 52, the brilliant British-based craft beer club. And have they got a cracking offer for you? As a Modern Man listener, you can get 50% off a box of 8 delicious craft beers. That's right, 8 lovely beers sent directly to your home or, hell, your office, why not, for just 12 quid. All you need to do is head over to beer52.com/modern52 to claim your half price first box of craft beer. But then there's no obligation to keep subscribing, and for everyone who takes out the offer, our friends at Beer 52 will chuck us some beer money. That's right, beer for everyone. Reward the future you at beer52.com/modern52. Right, so I'm conversationally lubricated and ideologically erect, and I'm ready for my weekly chat with Alex Fox. It's the Foxhole. Hello,
Alex. Are you ready to slide into the Foxhole, slippery and slick?
I am ready to thrust our way through another listener's question.
I've got some really thrustable news to start us off with.
Please, go ahead.
Do you remember we were talking about my highly erotic and yet shocking visit to Rio's, the naked sex sauna on Kentish Town Road?
Do I? I've had about half a dozen people email me about it asking for more details. Apparently we didn't go into enough.
Unfortunately, nobody can go into enough or even get enough muff there now because Rio's has burnt down. Apparently there was a huge fire that started in one of the private cabins near the smoking area. In the middle of the day, and there were huge plumes of black smoke emitted from the sauna premises. And
Actually, when we were talking about smoking fetishes just a few weeks ago, I did point out that you want to keep that away from any bed linen.
It's a bit of a terrible combo, really, isn't it? Really hot sauna plus smoking area.
But is it going to come back? Do you know?
A word on the street, on Kentish Town Road, in fact, is that it's going to take them around 6 months to renovate the place. So
we'll have to go back and record an episode when it's ready. I say we, on no account are you seeing me naked.
So many people that I spoke to were lamenting the fact that this is yet another closure, albeit this time for damage reasons rather than financial reasons or pressures from the council. It's another closure, at least in London, of a sex-positive venue. Lots of kinky clubs are closed. Down, lots of the traditional club spaces where events of that nature would take place are having licenses revoked for that type of play. It's one fewer place that you can now go to be sexually open with people, so it's a bit of a shame, really.
It is time for this week's listener question, brought to you by mycondom.com. Alex, remind us of their wonderful service.
They stock an enormous range of sometimes quite hard-to-find condoms, and as well as getting your 15% Foxhole discount, you can also get up to 20 free condoms when you make your first order.
Just for signing up.
Just for signing up and getting on down.
20 free fucks.
Yeah. Well, the condoms don't come with the fucks.
Yeah.
That's an added extra.
Tell the teenage me that. God, I was frustrated. Right, this question comes from someone who wishes to remain anonymous, but they say Alex. My girlfriend has expressed an interest in watching porn with me. I understand there is a genre of female-friendly porn that might be better suited to her tastes rather than the raunch I ordinarily go for. Any suggestions on distributors, directors, or titles that might fit this need?
Well, first up, maybe we should address the idea of female-friendly porn, because I don't know whether all listeners will know exactly what that means. The idea is that a lot of traditional porn has been made very much to please the male gaze. So the action can be very extreme and quite forceful at times. It's often shot from a male point of view, a male perspective. So what you're looking at is in the body of a man, you know. There's a lot of emphasis on things like cum shots and facials and ejaculation, which is not what all women want to see. So female-friendly porn, in contrast, for a start, tends to have lots more different body types. There's a lot more scene setting. There tends to be more storytelling and much more erotic build-up to really like set a sense that
the bit the men fast forward through, basically.
Well,
there's more of that.
Some women fast forward through it as well. As much as I really support female and couple friendly porn, I think it's really important that we emphasise that just because something's female friendly does not mean it will suit every female's taste, and
no,
vice versa.
It goes back to the thing of 50 Shades of Grey being a thing that was mostly read by women, right? Erotic literature tends not to appeal to men because they tend to be more visual. These are generalisations.
We're generalising, but I think it's really important
for us to say we
generalise. Yeah. So female friendly porn tends to do more storytelling, and there's a lot more of a build up to give people a chance to really get turned on and immersed in the action. There tends to be much more of a focus on female pleasure, so you see female masturbation, female orgasms, guys going down on girls, and a lot of it as well, because there's more of a drive to make it good in general, it tends to be good in terms of ethics as well. So the people performing, the people producing, everyone working on it gets treated fairly and gets a fair wage. As a result, a lot of it you will be expected to pay a fair price for as well, which I fully support.
Okay, so give us some brands, some directors, some places we can visit online where we should be downloading our couple porn.
There are tons. One of my favourites, which is a relatively new site called Frolic Me, which not only provides films that are shot in a very real way, they're still really erotic and beautiful, but they try and cast people who haven't had lots of plastic surgery. The way they're filmed means that they're beautifully lit and everything, but what you're seeing is real. It's accompanied by photography, because a lot of people like to get off to still images as well, and there's a very minimal amount of retouching. Well, there's lots of touching, but less photographic retouching. And the thing I love about Frolic Me is that it's also accompanied by written erotic stories. So you can read a story to get in the mood, then watch
the story
brought to life.
Sounds like a meeting in an office trying to get through all this paperwork whilst you're lying on a bed together trying to watch something visual. I mean, how do you get all the accompaniments ready?
Well, maybe the lady or the gent or whoever could read the story in their own time and start thinking about that, start building their fantasy, and then watch it brought to life in full surround sound and surround all sorts of other things with their partner. It's another option. It offers something different that turns people on. So that's one.
Give me one other suggestion of a really good place to get it.
Well, probably one of the biggest names in the feminist and female and couple-friendly porn scene is Erika Lust, who's a Swedish female porn producer. She's actually got a big campaign going on at the moment to try and encourage more women to get into porn, not just watching it, not just starring in it, but actually filming it. She posits the idea that if a woman is creating the film, then she's more likely to create something that other women would like to see. There is one more company I should definitely mention as well, because they're UK-based, and that's Joy Bear. They concentrate on really credible storylines. So rather than, you know, the pizza delivery guy or the plumber coming to the door and everybody getting Jolly Rogered within 30 seconds, they have this test where they say, well, if you can't imagine it happening in real life, it probably won't occur in one of our films.
Now, Surely the point of fantasy is to explore something that's beyond your actual sexual experience.
Arguably, but if you're seeing
not people
something
trapped in a loveless marriage in their 20th year.
No, it's all very erotic.
What's a plausible scenario?
Well, from their point of view, they think that if you're watching something that could feasibly happen to you in real life, that makes it more relatable and even more exciting.
Okay. And do these companies offer the same service for same-sex couples as well?
I'd say there are other porn production companies that are more suited to producing stuff for queer people. There's a really great series called Crash Pad that make really, really brilliant real life queer porn. Although you'd be surprised the number of women who love to watch gay porn. They love to watch men pleasuring each other and getting off on each other. That brings me on to my next point. The first thing that our question asker should maybe ask himself is what kind of porn his lady likes to watch, because she may well not want something that's sort of quite gentle and story-led and believable. She might want some fucking hardcore, unbelievable, XXX, extreme, hot crackers.
Orgy.
Or BDSM and then some.
Yeah.
In which case, kink.com.
Well, this is the thing. I wonder if the lady in a monogamous straight relationship who comes to her boyfriend and says, let's watch porn together, is maybe actually giving permission to say, look, I know you watch this dirty stuff. I know you watch whatever it is, Bukkake and fisting and threesomes. I want to watch that too. And actually, yeah, you're absolutely right that the sort of slow erotic approach may not be what she wants at all.
Or she might be saying, I've been watching all this really, really deeply fetishistic stuff in my private life, and I'd quite like to introduce that to our relationship. So maybe we could start watching porn together, yeah. And then I will gradually introduce you to the visuals of something I'd like you to reenact.
And I just would say, finally, if you are watching on a laptop together, turn off your WhatsApp notifications. That's just an unhorny distraction. Alex, as ever, thank you for your advice. If listeners have a question for you, what do they need to do with it?
They need to wander over to modernman.co.uk and hit feedback to ask me a question.
They certainly do. And thank you again to mycondom.com for sponsoring our listener questions. Listeners, you can get 15% off if you just type in the word
foxhole
at checkout. Well, that's nearly it for this week's Modern Man. Remember to follow us on Twitter at TheModernMan, or I'm at facebook.com/OllieMan. I do have time, though, to announce a new Manbassador. It is Nick from Queensland, Australia. He says, Ollie, I've just finished an epic road trip from Brisbane to Sydney, then to Melbourne and back to Brisbane with my wife and her sister who had come over from the UK for a holiday. We listened to all your episodes on the trip and love them. That is an absolute headfuck, Nick. I'm surprised you didn't career off the road. He says, if you don't have a Manbassador for Australia, I would love to be one. And if you do have a Manbassador for Australia, then put me down for Queensland, as it's a bloody big country. So I now anoint you Manbassador for Queensland. Congratulations. Our theme music is by Django Django from their self-titled debut album, and this is our record of the week. It's called Dry. It's by Foreign Fields, and it's out now on Caroline Records. I've been Ollie Mann, the producer, Matt Hill, and we'll see you next Tuesday.
I've had a year spent in dust and dirt. I am